Starting on page 179, John chapter 20, let's start with verse 19. On the evening of that first day of the week, the disciples were together. They had locked the doors because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. Jesus came in and stood among them. He said, "May peace be with you." Then he showed them his hands and his side. The disciples were very happy when they saw the Lord. Again, Jesus said, "May peace be with you. The Father has sent me, so now I am sending you." He then breathed on them. He said, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone's sins, their sins are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven." Thomas was one of the 12 disciples. He was also called Didymus. He was not with the other disciples when Jesus came, so they told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "First, I must see the nail marks in his hands. I must put my finger where the nails were. I must put my hand into his side. Only then will I believe." A week later, Jesus' disciples were in the house again. Thomas was with them. Even though the doors were locked, Jesus came in and stood among them. He said, "May peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands? Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen me, but still have believed." Okay, please do keep these handy. We'll be pulling from those again in just a couple minutes. But first, I want to share something. Some of you know that I am a huge Beatles fan. It's a byproduct of having a mother who would not just listen to Beatles music on the weekend when we would clean house, but we would actually jam to Beatles music. You know, the old console where when you're dancing around, the album would actually skip. So last week when we had the musicians, the guest musicians play "Here Comes the Sun," it was awesome. So when I read this particular passage, some of you may get this, some of you may not. But when I read this particular passage, what was going through my head was laughter, because I kept saying, "No, Jesus did not come through the bathroom window." It says Jesus came and stood among them. There was no open window, no bathroom window. Apparently, I have had Beatles music on my mind a lot lately. So let's get back to the text. This particular text is simply relegated to Doubting Thomas text. And I'm going to challenge that this morning. I'm going to challenge that because at the beginning of this season, the very first Sunday of Lent, I talked about a text in John's Gospel where Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Thomas was present, and I ended that particular message that morning with letting go of our doubt one cluster at a time. And actually, we're going to go ahead and we're going to look at that particular passage. So let's turn to page 162. And in this particular text, page 162 and 1114, Thomas the twin is named again. So we have, starting with 14, "So then he," Jesus, "told them plainly, 'Lazarus is dead. For your benefit, I am glad I was not there. Now you will believe. But let us go to him.' Then Thomas, who was also called Didymus, spoke to the rest of the disciples, 'Let us go also,' he said, 'then we can die with Jesus.'" There's not much doubt in that particular passage. Thomas is willing to give up his life to go to Judea with Jesus, even though everyone knew the Judeans were ready to kill Jesus, and Thomas figured he would probably also die. And then we're going to look at one more passage quick, and that's on page 168. And then we can move these away for this morning. So 168, John 14, starting with verse 1, very bottom, page 168. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God. Believe in me also. There are many rooms in my Father's house. If this were not true, would I have told you that I am going there? Would I have told you that I would prepare a place for you there? If I go and do that, I will come back and I will take you to be with me. Then you will also be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going, so how can we know the way? And with that, we have Thomas asking, where are you going? He admits the fact. He owns his uncertainty. He claims the fact that he doesn't know what's happening. So he asks Jesus. And then in today's story, we have this story, which basically gives Thomas his identity, Doubting Thomas. For over 2,000 years, if you think of the apostles and you think of Thomas, oftentimes doubting or doubting Thomas is what comes to mind. And from this, I'm going to bring up a very unfortunate point, and that's the fact that we know that this happens yet today. We know that in everyday life, one particular situation is oftentimes can classify a person or label a person, whether the person made a conscious decision to do that action, maybe a bad action, resulting in a bad mistake. But that action, that one mistake, gives that person a label or a name of that mistake. Last summer, a classmate told me of a story when she was doing an internship as a chaplain. And she was leading a group discussion, and the discussion was just kind of starting to get going, and all of a sudden somebody became ill. Not get to the bathroom on time, and proceeded to just vomit in the middle of the circle. She was mortified. She ended the group, sent everybody back to their rooms. And as we were talking, she said, I didn't know what to do. She said, but the thing that went through my mind was, I hope this guy is not forever remembered as that guy who puked in group. And I think we can relate. I think we know of some situations where stuff like this, horrifying things happen. Person or a student who faints in the middle of a presentation. The basketball player who misses that winning free throw. Person who has a seizure and the ambulance is called, or maybe a pregnant woman who's water braced while she's shopping at Kohl's department store. These particular events can't be controlled. So we're probably willing to give a little more grace, a little more understanding. But what about the person who makes a conscious decision? As I said earlier, the person who makes a mistake. What about the student who cheats on a test? The person who embezzles money from a company, the spouse who has an affair, a person who's arrested for having drugs. Oftentimes we know what happens. That student is forever known as a cheater. The person who embezzled money is forever known as a thief. Spouse, forever known as a cheater or a homewrecker. Person arrested for drugs is forever known as druggie, drug user, drug dealer. Person who served time is forever known as an ex-convict. Now the interesting thing is that not only are individuals given these labels and these titles, but events and groups of communities. Earlier this year, Pastor Pat came to my school and participated in a forum. I think I may have talked about this once before, maybe he has. He was part of a panel to discuss worship service and worship style. He talked about Zion's worship style, which is very different than any other ELC church that you go to. The other two people were from Chicago area. One was from a African-American congregation, which is a very different style of worship. And the other pastor was from a congregation also in Chicago, white congregation. And I believe he labeled it, again, labeled it, as Nosebleed High Church, which, for those of you that understand that, what that means is it's a lot of tradition, there's incense, there is a lot of formality. But we got to talking to students and the pastors in the panel, and we're talking about, you know, as future leaders, how are we, like, defining and describing worship style? You know, what is kind of like that breaking point for low church versus high church? And every one of the panelists, every one of the pastors said, don't use those labels. Don't say high church and low church. Because that really gets in the way of somebody trying to experience worship. It inhibits their actual experience. And in a similar way, the Zion community that I've been part of for the last few months is oftentimes called a small church community. And with that, oftentimes there's this underlying description or this self-definition of, we're too small to do anything of value. And that, I think, is a bunch of baloney. I really do. I have seen this group of people provide for every single month some organization with this monthly loud offering, today for the Rape Crisis Center. Some group is being touched by people from this community. This group of people reaches across the globe in relationship with World Vision. This group of people started a pantry which has grown to be used by so many people. The space was outgrown. This group of people provided men's clothing for homeless men here in Madison. And this group of people welcomed a student among their midst. And trust me, I did not lack for activities to participate in, nor did I lack for opportunities to develop my leadership skills. What I'm getting at with naming all of these labels that we just tend to put upon ourselves or put upon others is that these labels and these names, they keep us from doing what it is that we are called to do. How is the person labeled as a thief inhibited from sharing the gift of music? How is the person labeled as an ex-convict not able to share the gift of agriculture and growing fresh food for the food pantry? How is a small church community kept from recognizing its own gifts, its own talents, and kept from knowing what it is that God calls them to be and to do? In today's story, Thomas says, unless I see, I will not believe. And Thomas is forever known as Doubting Thomas. But as we saw in earlier stories of John's gospel, there is so much more to Thomas. Thomas is ready to do whatever it is that Jesus calls him to do. He was ready to go and die with Jesus. Yet, Thomas couldn't believe that Jesus was with them among the living unless he saw it. Can you switch the slide once forward, everyone's ending? Awesome. Here's a picture, I believe this is painted by an Italian named Caravaggio. And what I've heard about this particular artist is that he likes to put himself in the paintings. And I don't know if he did it with this one, but if you can imagine putting yourself in the role of Thomas, I think we can all agree that at times we are the person who has doubt. We have doubted Jesus' presence among us here and now. In today's text, there's two different things that I really see. One is the fact that the locked doors did not keep Jesus from his disciples. It didn't keep Jesus from sharing his peace. It didn't keep Jesus from turning their fear into joy. Remember, there's no open window here. There is a locked door. And nothing kept Jesus away from his beloved disciples. And the second is the fact that Jesus came and spoke directly to Thomas. Jesus called Thomas by name, knew of his doubt, addressed his doubt, and reminded everyone gathered there that there is more to Thomas than his doubt. Jesus knew what it was, that what it would take for Thomas's doubt to disappear. Thomas recognizes Jesus, and he calls him not Jesus, but my Lord, my God. Because he knew Jesus' death and resurrection gives us all new life. We are not bound by the mistakes that we make. Our mistakes do not define us forever. Remember, the disciples were in a locked room. They were in a dark world. Their friend was just crucified, just killed a couple days earlier. And they honestly thought that they were going to be next. Yet, Jesus is present, is among them, bringing peace and his pledge of new life. Each and every time during worship service, when we gather, we share Christ's peace. And that's a time when we are truly expressing our desire for Christ's peace to be a part of that other person's life. We are reminding each other of Jesus' pledge for us for a new life. And again, our label is taken away. We are no longer thief, cheater, home wrecker, drunk, ex-convict. We are no longer low church or high church or small community church. Jesus brings us his peace and his pledge of new life to us. We are again Joyce, Earl, Shirley. We are again Zion ELCA Church. No locked door, no label, no title, no name keeps Jesus away from us, his beloved.